It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Little of what it probably is going to sound like in just a week or two. Yeah, it's a beautiful sound as we get started with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on this Saturday. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And it is time.
Oh,
that's right. It's a week out from the Utes.
Yep.
Getting to go chase turkeys 2 weeks. Well, less than. For the rest of us to go chase some turkeys, it's here. Yep.
It is here. It's right on top of us, Sean.
And by temperature, by not the calendar on your wall, but the calendar, God's calendar out there, it's springtime. Go look at the pollen on your truck. If you think I'm lying, go look at the pollen on your truck. Wherever you are, go walk outside, look at it, and tell me if you don't think it is springtime.
You'll see the blooms on my orange tree.
Really?
If all the blooms make orange,
I'm coming to your house.
I will have at least 10,000 oranges on one tree.
This guy's not
I'm talking
joking.
About an orange, navel orange tree.
Because I've seen you have darn near 10,000 satsumas before.
Yes. But this is just one tree, and it's an orange tree, and I have never seen so many blooms on a tree in all my life.
It's a good sign.
It's a good sign.
So isn't that what they always used to say? The orange trees are blooming, the turkeys are gobbling? Oh, wait, no, that was dogwood.
It don't matter what. If something's blooming, the turkey's a goblin.
So I've been hearing reports. So I want to get into that, what you're hearing and what I've been hearing. I've been hearing reports of, I have not heard it myself. I've had so many things going on, not been able to listen in the morning. But I heard that, I guess, early the week before last. Look at that. Wow. You got to send that picture into Bill Finch for plain gardening for the Gulf Coast tomorrow. Look at those blooms on your orange tree. Hey, y'all, we're going to go raid Mike's tree here come fall and get
those. I'm going to get rich this year. I'm going to sell them.
Got you a bunch of – that'll be a bunch of oranges. Yeah. But, you know, here in – I guess 2 weeks ago, I had a buddy say they were hearing goblin. I say 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, not this last week, but at the beginning of the week before. So come Monday, it'd be 2 weeks. When he heard them, and
I'm
then he
sure
said they slowed
gone.
Down some, then picked back up. And I have heard people here, and that was down in North Mobile, South Washington County. And I heard somebody say the same thing for Choctaw County, and somebody else for Washington County that they were hearing goblin, pretty good goblin.
Yeah, and also Marengo County.
You
one buddy that's been a couple times listening and has heard several gobble in Marengo County, but. You know,
now that could all. We got a cold front, by the way, y'all. Comes through tomorrow and will cool us down to maybe even at the freezing point by Tuesday night.
Yep.
But it looks like it rebounds pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Although, you know, that's the thing. Once you get the length of the day as part of this, of course, with a lot of birds. I mean, birds migrate because of length of day. Once you get length of day, and you get some pretty weather, you know, you'll get them gobbling. Even if there's cold. I mean, how many times have you turkey hunted? And I've been sitting there shivering cold, wishing I wore long johns and killed a turkey.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. Once they get started and the length of the day and all that, it's they're on. I mean, don't stop and then start back and stop. Hey, once they start, it's on.
Now, there's obviously better goblin days than others.
Sure.
And there's some of them that make complete sense. You're like, a perfect morning, he's goblin. Sometimes perfect mornings, and they don't gobble. And then bad mornings, and they do go. There are the exceptions to it.
That's why we got to go every day if we can.
I wish I could. So welcome to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Two subjects this morning. We're going to talk about some turkeys, and then in the second half of the show, Captain Wayne Miller is going to join us because the way I picture it, he is like the masker, Mardi Gras thing. He is the masker. His boat is the float. The bass are the revelers, the people on the side, and he's going down, and the creeks he's fishing are like the roadways of downtown Mobile, and the bass are saying, throw me something, mister, and he's pitching them all kind of stuff, crankbaits, soft plastic, spinner baits, throwing it all, and the fish are grabbing them up.
Yeah, I saw his text. He likes a Sally Bruiser.
Yeah, he got some crankbaits, but he is catching them on everything right now, and some really chunk bass.
Yeah, we saw the pictures of them. I mean, fine bass.
And check those out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. All right, so let's talk turkey first, though. And getting ready, got youth season getting ready to happen next weekend. Scouting-wise, now it's, you know, the different thing is you hunt the same place a lot, I hunt the same place a lot.
Right.
So part of it is, you know, our scouting is a little bit easier because we're going to go to these certain places and listen or look to cut tracks. I'll tell you what, I was at the farm last weekend and did not cut tracks.
Yeah.
Did not cut tracks. I'm not going to panic yet because my place is one of those, we have 640 acres.
Yeah.
And on a Tuesday, there won't be a turkey on there, and there'll be four strutters on the next day. It's just one, you know, I just wait. Right now, like, normally somebody would panic because I didn't cut a track anywhere, but I've seen it enough that now if it's 3 weeks from now, I don't cut a track, different story. But usually they come to our pastures here as it gets in.
See your turkeys.
Some of them, some of them I do, and that's one good thing I've done in the past. And it just depends on how much they're using the pastures and where we have cattle moved. But when those turkeys are really in the pastures, I do some of my scouting with my eyes.
Yeah,
and I have a spot and scope and real good binoculars, real good glass, and I start getting an idea. Okay, I got this many strutters using, and we have a real big pasture, so there'll be strutters using different parts of the same pasture. And if I have a good number of birds, I can kind of get an idea, okay, that bird's probably roosting over there, that bird's probably roosting over there. You know, they're all ended up in this pasture. But that's a luxury I have, being able to see. Seeing them.
They still fool you. You think, well, he's going to fly up and roost over there. Well, next morning you go and he's just the opposite where you think he's going to be.
Yeah. Believe me, I've had whole seasons like that where you say, okay, I got this all figured out. I'm going to do this. And, you know, that bird is definitely, he's showing up in this north corner or south or somewhere else. And you go in there, make no noise, go in the pitch black, lean up against a tree, don't call, don't crow, don't owl, don't do anything because you know you're where you need to be.
Yeah.
That's when he fires off on the complete other side of the pasture. Usually what happens. That's what makes it fun.
And then you go that way.
Oh,
then you turn back, and he starts gobbling finally where you were, right?
Yeah,
where
right
you
by
were.
Your tree.
I mean, that is what makes turkey hunting so much
the chess
fun.
Game of turkey
it
hunting.
It is a chess game. I mean, you go out, and you think you got him figured out this morning, and you get all set up, and you call him, and he's starting to come, and then some hen comes, and he goes off, and you don't get a shot at him. Well, you say, tomorrow morning, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go set up right over here because he's going to fly down over here, and I'm going to get him. And then you go there, and he's 200 yards further down, and, you know, he gets you all messed up. I mean, it's just such a chess game and you don't kill him for two or three days, and you just can't wait to get back and try him one more time.
They get in your brain big time, and I think that's one of the many things that makes it a pursuit that drives both you and I to be in the woods as much as possible in the spring. I'll talk about that, too. So for folks on the river, it's a tough situation. River's flooded back. We'll talk about that from a fishing aspect a little bit later with Captain Wayne Miller. But from a turkey hunting aspect, if you hunt private land on the river, let alone all the – think about the public acreage, Upper Delta, WMA, places that a lot of us, I spent a lot of time turkey hunting those areas.
Yeah.
And this is not a kind of a – because I want to get into something about floodwater and turkey hunting in a second. But right now there's no question. I mean, not only are the gates locked, you have Barry pushing up to the 12, 13 feet. You've got the Tom Bigby and Alabama both up. It's way underwater. No hunting.
Right.
The turkeys are up in the tree limbs eating the buds usually.
That's right.
I mean, some will get out of the swamp and get to the piney woods if they're close enough on the edges. A lot of them stay. A lot of those turkeys stay in the swamp the whole time. You could even hear them gobble some mornings. But there's
amazing.
No land.
I don't
but there's
know.
No land.
Yeah, they may even mate in the trees. I don't know.
But you watch them. They eat the buds.
Oh,
and
yeah. I've seen them do
this
that.
This is a good situation right now. Well, if it's going to flood, it's good to flood when trees are budding because it gives those turkeys access to food up there with those buds, and those buds have enough water in them. It keeps those turkeys alive for a while.
Yeah.
And with a flood this big, it takes a while for it to go back down. Now, what I was going to say is on talking about turkeys and flood water, when you don't have floods this high, okay, this high. Now, there's a different story when you have them this high, but when they're not this high, I would suggest don't get run off with flood water because if you have a slough you got to cross or something like that and you have hundreds of acres of dry on the other side, turkeys don't care. I mean, how many times have I put on a pair of chest waders to get to a turkey? It's been a bunch. Now, I'm lucky I've got to hunt in the river swamp a good bit.
Right.
But a pair of chest waders and then put my turkey vest on with my knee boots in the back, wade through the section, take those chest waders off, put the knee boots on, and go hunting.
Yeah, kick a rattlesnake, a moccasinide away, mm-hmm. and shoot that alligator off and get on across that slough and kill that turkey.
Yeah. Well, you Mike's been around me enough to know that people will, come up on a cottonmouth or something, and they'll be like, shoot him. I was like, I'm going to shoot a cottonmouth. I'm hunting a turkey. I'm not making any noise.
It's amazing what we do to turkey hunt now, I'm telling you.
You're going to get me to shoot a – people have said, shoot that snake. Nuh-uh. There's a turkey around here. That snake can crawl across my boot. There's a turkey here got to kill. Yeah. If we kill the turkey, then we can talk about snake. Okay, we're going to run the break here in a second. I want to come back and talk some tactics and scouting and also talk some technology. As I've had a little fun this winter, I guess, messing around with TSS, Tungsten Super Shot. Yeah. And it started as a project for me trying to rig out a shotgun for my daughter, my oldest child, but she is petite. She's 13, but she's petite, and I wanted to have a turkey gun that would be a killer, but not kill her shoulder when she shot it.
Sure.
And so I ended up getting a Stevens 410. I've been shooting TSS for that number 9 shot. Hammer at 35 yards. And I thought, well, for Daddy wants to look at this too. So I bought some TSS in 12, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we get back.
Absolutely.
I set the target up at 65 yards. We'll tell you how that looked. Yeah. Coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this Mardi Gras edition of the Outdoor Show. The fish are saying, throw something to me.
Yep.
The turkeys are saying, throw some calls to me or something like that. No, they're not. Probably not. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I hate to, there's always a temptation preseason when you go to listen.
Yeah.
Trying to make them gobble that one more time, with a yelper or a crow or something like that. But then... last thing, then you go through I don't want people call. We don't want to, what we call yelper whipping them. Don't want them to hear more calling than they have to. But gosh, the temptation's there.
If you
go listen and he gobbles a couple times on the limb and I just want an owl or something to make him gobble and yelp.
Fine, but sometimes, I don't want to yip at him.
But there's a temptation.
Sometimes they fly right to you.
Right.
Yeah.
But I just, sometimes the temptation is like, I just want to hear him gobble one more time, even though it doesn't matter. Cause like you and I said, he'll move a couple times probably between, when you hear that and opening day.
Yeah.
But it is a temptation. Gosh, I'd love to hear that gobble.
Sean, let me tell you what I did the other day. Well, a couple weeks ago, I started putting a little food out, some wheat out to feed the turkeys, kind of get them in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got cameras out on it just to see what I could see. And I'm done on feeding. I'm not putting any more out. I can't tell you how many hogs was in there eating that little bitty seed. And when the hogs wasn't in there, the deer were in there. And when the deer wasn't in there, the coons were in there. And never saw a turkey. But I'm done. They rooted up the whole place in there. Nothing but a mud hole, especially as wet as it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, people don't think about, hogs won't eat that little bitty wheat seed. They stay in there for hours and hours, and I'm talking about all night long, they'll be in there eating that little bitty seed and root everything up in there. I'm done. I will not put any more food out. I'm done, period.
I learned that lesson, not as small as wheat, but I've seen them definitely eat that. Heck, you've seen the deer come into a deer patch when you just plant it.
Oh,
before,
yeah.
And they're getting that seed. But I would.
With hogs, too, now. I mean, if you got hogs, they'll root up your fields,
sure,
getting that little bitty seed.
Well, I years ago, I had, it was towards the, it was the end of, maybe it was that, maybe deer season was over back when it ended in January, and I started pouring sorghum out for my quail. I messed with quail, and it's like a real hard winter. Maybe that was 07, something like that. It was a hard winter. And I said, I'm going to feed these quail, try to keep my populations up, see the ones that survived here. I go down the road with the cedar and spread it the width of the road near where I had good quail cover and all that stuff. And I no sooner got to the end of the loop and come back, there'd be deer out the road eating the sorghum. The deer hammered it.
I know it.
So, little seed, they'll still eat it all day long. All right, so let's talk about this going forward into turkey season. Youth is coming up this coming weekend. Then we have big kids season after that. We're always wondering, are we going to be in the right point for the best gobbling? If you look at the long-term charting, it's like the second week of season peaks with number of turkeys killed. if you look at the fans and Spurs that's put out by Outdoor Alabama and the department, they do some long-term trends. And if you, I mean, there's some years it's a little bit different. It's third week and not second.
I like first and second week personally.
Yeah, and they show the peak of harvest being second week. Peak of goblin is not second week, but peak of harvest. In other words, most turkeys killed second week. And it makes sense. I mean, as soon as they kind of gobble, those ones that kind of gobble get killed. So you could have, you know, less goblin and more killed.
Younger ones too.
Yeah, that's right. The true believers, as I call them. I said, God bless a 2.5-year-old turkey. God bless that gobbler because he makes me feel like I'm a superstar.
Yeah,
you know, I think I'm like, man, I got this when they come running in, beard swinging. But you know, we look at it as temperature wise, and it depends on what happens here over the next 2 weeks is where that lays. Some years. It's been going on and, you know, essentially we're coming into the first week of season, but they're acting like it's the third week of season. Some years, the first week of season, they're still bunched up.
Yeah.
You know, it just depends on weather-wise. But as we've had this warm winter, barring anything unforeseen, I think we're either on schedule or ahead of schedule when we hit youth season and adult season.
I believe you're right. I think we'll probably be about right.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be about normal. I think I don't think
we have normal is like weird these days. So.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll just kind of see what kind of idea after next weekend what you hear on the youth season, and hopefully I will be.
And Dylan, my grandson, who I take on youth season, has got a soccer game Saturday morning.
Does he not understand that? That's
I told him. I tried to explain to him, son. You can play soccer.
Here's the thing: is
turkey hunting.
A soccer ball can be kicked. I've said this before because my son plays soccer too. A soccer ball can be kicked at any point in the day.
That's right.
Turkeys are only really gobbling hard this time of year at first light.
That's right.
Soccer ball doesn't care. Soccer ball, sit there. You can come back at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and play a soccer game.
Yeah.
Let's kill some turkeys. I'm with you. The lament of folks like us and have kids and grandkids with team sports, but it's a whole other show.
Yep.
So I hope to have my daughter out there for youth opener. And what I was talking about before the break is getting this idea to try to get her into turkey hunting. She's been going with me over the years, but to be frank with you, number one, just the situation hadn't been right for her to shoot. Number two, I tell you, I mean, I have a petite daughter, and putting a 12-gauge, even a automatic, on her shoulder, the recoil would be one thing. She couldn't hold the gun up.
That's the problem.
She could not hold that gun up.
Issue with a
Remington 1187 with turkey choking. She's not going to be able to hold that gun up for more than a second, you know? Yeah. So I started looking around. What do I do? And I've been reading this stuff for a few years about tungsten super shot, TSS, and this great performance. And I was reading more about what they were doing with 12 gauges and look at all this range, look at this stuff. Then I started looking around and said, what about if they're getting that kind of performance out of the 12, what about 410?
Yeah.
And I got to look at it, and this year they have it for sure because I bought it, but in the last couple years, I think it's 3 years old or so, Federal's produced 410 tungsten super shot. And so I bought some and bought even though I had a 410, I had to buy another one because
it's
a turkey gun. Bought that.
A little lighter weight too, wasn't it?
Lighter weight. Yeah. I have a Stevens, about a 4-pound gun.
Yeah.
Stevens single shot, break open with 410, and it has a factory modified choke in it. Okay, I've had a dickens of a time getting anything tighter than that, but I've showed you pictures, if y'all have seen on the Facebook page too, those pictures are a modified choke in a 410 at 35 yards.
That's strong too.
What a
wonderful pattern that is.
And it's
unbelievable.
It throws a great pattern. And so I now have a gun that my daughter can hold up with ease, can carry with ease, and kill a turkey at 35 yards. And be honest with you, if she's not with me, she's not carrying it. Depends on how I'm hunting and where I'm hunting. I may carry that gun some too, because it's so small, the darn gun, you could put it in your vest. You put it in the back of your vest there and carry it with you while you're hunting. So it's a really neat gun. So that got me thinking. I kind of went backwards. Most people went to the strongest TSS and then worked their way backwards. I went to the lightest because I was trying to figure out a gun for my child.
Right.
But it got me so interested shooting the 410, I started moving up the ranks. So what I've done here, and these pictures you can check out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. My latest test is with my gun, my 12, 1187 Remington. And you'll see two pictures. One of them is with these are factory Remington chokes. The first one's with my modified choke. Now, y'all, normally when I shoot the Winchester turkey ammo I've shot forever, I shoot a extra full. I shoot the Remington super extra full extended turkey choke.
Right.
Okay. Been doing that for years. but I had some worries about TSS shot and constriction with a very tight choke, so I stayed away from it. So I shot it once with a modified and then again with a full.
At 65 yards.
At 65 yards. With a rangefinder, I ranged this at 65 yards. I mean, I was pretty as scientific as I could be. Range of 65 yards. I actually put the gun on a rest, so I know it was, you know, going to be rested. And to be frank with you, the biggest problem at 65 yards with my eyes these days, by the way, if you're a good optometrist, I need you. At 65 yards, I had trouble focusing on the target and bead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my limiting factor. I shot it, and y'all can look at those pictures. With the modified, I killed the turkey.
I'm counting the shots here on the modified.
Yeah, so you're looking.
It's 20-something shots.
Yeah.
Kill shots.
Yeah. That's a modified choke.
In his neck and head and upper body.
Yep.
That's what a modified.
It's modified.
At 65 yards.
Modified.
Okay, now.
And that's not 3.5 inch. That's a 3 inch. It's a 3 inch TSS number 9 12 gauge. And yes, y'all can shoot number 9s for turkey when you're shooting TSS. Then I switched to the Remington Factory Full. Okay, this is nothing but the one you get. You buy a Remington shotgun. It comes with your selection of chokes. This is the full, like when the ducks are wary in late season in the Delta, some of us will go to a full choke. It's that full choke. It's not a turkey full. It's just a full choke.
Yeah.
Shot at 65.
35 to 40 shots in his upper neck and head at 65 yards. Now, think about that. 35 to 40 shots in his upper body and neck area and head.
So the other part of this is you'll say, okay, well, Sean, you hit the turkey, but did you hit the turkey hard enough? Okay. So with a piece of wood behind it, it blows the pieces of wood through.
Yes.
Okay? Piece of plywood behind it. Now, I was shooting at a thinner piece of plywood, but the way I had to set it up, and this is just some, because I had cows in one part of a pasture, and I had to move the target over to look over one of our ponds or lake, yeah. Because I couldn't shoot that way because the cows were there. I realized it gave me a secondary impression, so I'd shoot, and I'd watch not only it go through the target there, it would carry out in a pattern out across the lake.
Yeah.
And I looked at that pattern, and my best guess, that part, like 65 yards, I'd know because I did it with a rangefinder. This part I don't know for sure, but I can estimate from 65 yards that I still had a pattern carrying together at 85 or 90 yards from where I was sitting.
Yes.
Now, I don't know the loss. I don't know how strong it was out there at the end, but it was still together. Mm-hmm. And there are people talking about shooting this TSS and shooting birds at 90, 95 yards. Now, you've got to do your own research and how your gun shoots. But I'm here to tell you, I've shot everything down from a 410 to a 12 gauge with the Federal TSS. And that is some strong medicine right there.
It sure is.
Y'all got you got pasture turkeys you got to reach out and get, or maybe you want to get a lightweight gun in a 20 or a 410 for a youth that's going to be hunting next weekend. Go by McCoy Outdoor Company, pick some of this shot up, and tell me if you don't think it is magic in a box. All right, coming right back, we're going to talk some fishing. Captain Wayne Miller joins us next. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here on this Saturday. And lots to talk about. We talked some turkey. Now let's talk some green trout.
Wayne don't know anything about turkeys?
Be quiet. I try to keep him listening as he's out there in the boat fishing. Joined by Captain Wayne Miller. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are y'all?
Good. You hearing any turkeys gobbling out there?
That's what I want to know.
No, I have not heard any turkeys. I hadn't seen any hogs. I run into people all the time. They want all kind of information about other critters, and the only thing you know I'm after is a bass.
Yeah, but we're asking you because you spend like 360 days a year on the water of the Mobile Tensaw Delta. So, yeah, we got questions, man.
I very seldom see any turkeys, and the hogs have gotten pretty smart. They just don't poke their nose out anywhere like they used to.
Yeah, because those noses have gone with the rest of the pigs when they got shot. I want to talk about bass fishing. Of course, again, we're talking about this on the backdrop of a high river. But before we do, I've had thoughts this week as you're sending me those pictures that are up on our Facebook page. When you're texting those to me, I pictured it this way. It's Mardi Gras. Right? And the roadway are the creeks you're fishing. That's the road. That's like Royal Street or Government Street, whatever creek you're fishing. The float is your boat. You are the reveler. You're the masker. Okay. The people are the bass are the people that are standing there waiting for the throws, and the bass are throw something to me, mister. And you've thrown them crankbaits, you've thrown them spinner baits, you've thrown them sallies. They want all the throws. That's like you're throwing them moon pies and you're throwing them necklaces and cups. I mean, they're ready to grab on these things. You've had your own little Mardi Gras parade.
The only thing Wayne's got to worry about is he's got to get on the right parade route.
Well, that's it, Mike. You know, that's been the trick for this past week. Because we started out, man, the water last weekend, the water temperature had gotten up in the low 70s.
Wow. So, I remember talking about that. This is February.
As we progressed into the week, we had that cold front, and it bumped that water temperature down about 5 degrees.
Yeah.
But, you know, the good thing about that is, we're just flooded in the middle and the north. I mean, I don't know anybody that's going up there to fish. So the people that are bass fishing are primarily staying along the causeway and the rivers down south below the interstate. But, you know, for the causeway fishermen, you know, the trick has been to get in these bays and the creeks that have grass.
Yeah.
And, even though the water in some places is heavily stained, it's the filtering effect of that grass helps tremendously. And those fish, I mean, once they've made that trek, they've come out of those deeper, holes that they sit in waiting to spawn. Once they move up in those bays, they're pretty much there. They're not going to leave. So, conditions, can be tough, but, there's plenty of fish up in the shallow water that, you can target. One thing I'd encourage people to do is, as you move around in these bays and even the creek, make it a point to try to find the clearest possible water, because sometimes just a little bit of additional clarity, makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I just figured it out, too, what parade route he's on. Parade route B for bass. Okay, so that and that clarity, how often does that change? So we at the river is we're talking about looking at Barry Steam Plant, but I mean, y'all can look at any gauge you want to, and we're going to another big flood. How do you kind of gauge when this one's gotten too stained and there's another one to go to? Because I mean, up top, you're right, middle and north delta, we know it's flooded, it's over the back of the north end of the lakes, it's shut down. But on the causeway, it's a little bit different. It doesn't often come over the north end as much, and it depends on wind, right, and tide, and how I've seen a bay look really good, and a tide change and a wind direction change, and all of a sudden that muddy water's in the bay.
Yeah, and that happens. You know, the tidal effect has tremendous influence on that, as well does the wind. But there again, irregardless of what that water color goes to, I mean, right now, the water temperature is 65.8, right where I'm at. So, the fish, like I say, they're not going to move back out. One little tip I will give everybody that has been over this past week has really helped me a lot. And I've had some other people in the boat with me, and we really made a attempt to target those real shallow areas in the bays that have good grass and still have good clear water. Unfortunately, a lot of those areas, the grass is, it's almost right up at the top of the water. And one thing, that we have available nowadays is these high-speed reels. And I'm throwing a spinnerbait like that Sally. I sent you pictures of, some fish I caught on the Snagless Sally this past week. But if you just try to throw that on an old reel that's got a 5-to-1 gear retrieve ratio, you just literally, there's no way to keep it up out of the grass.
Right.
Basically what you want it to do is just skip along the top of that grass and bump it occasionally. And, they'll come out of that grass and just really annihilate it. But having an 8-to-1 gear retrieve ratio reels enables you to do that, and it doesn't work you to death.
And you probably want to drop it in the hose. If you come across a grass patch where you got a little hose, just kind of come across the top of the grass and let it sink down into the hole there a little bit and drill really a little bit slower, which usually gets a bite.
Yeah, I mean, that'll really trigger one to bite. And, that's something else that you really need this time of year is is some good polarized sunglasses, because it helps you see some of those darker, you know, thicker spots of grass. But there may be a lane right there, you know, beside it that you can work that spinnerbait through. And polarized glasses really help you do that. But, I mean, we've really just been absolutely crushing the fish down here, you know, on spinnerbaits and swim baits and even crankbaits at times. And the topwater bites picking up a little bit, too.
Ribbit.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think about the front that's getting ready to come through? It's going to get down, you know, somewhere around 30, you know, or so. Going to be freezing, what is it, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Tuesday night, I think. It's going to be cold Monday night into Tuesday, but I guess that freeze, Dr. Bill says, comes Tuesday night into Wednesday.
Yeah. So,
you know, I mean, it's really going to slow the bite down, obviously. You know, they get pretty lethargic when you see, you know, with the kind of temperatures they're talking about, you know, we'll probably see another, you know, anywhere from, you know, 3 to 6, 7 degree drop in water temperature, and that's pretty significant. But you know, the great thing is, man, the water warms up real quick too. So, you know, after one of these fronts, we get a couple of days where the sun shines, and man, they're right back active just like they were before it.
You know, I want to hit the rewind here and go back to something you're saying. Let's talk about fish in the grass in these bays, because you and Mike just talked about, you know, the holes out in the grass, and you're talking about a high retrieve rate ratio on those reels to be able to work those baits. When, I mean, because you start thinking grass flats, there can be acres of grass flat. Okay, are you casting just where you have broken grass? Are you casting, you know, there's that edge in a bay where the grass flat comes out to a certain depth and it kind of stops, even though there's still probably some more growing, but, you know, you get an edge or a ledge. Kind of take us into a bay, and how do you break down what part of the grass mat that you fish?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of times the edge that you're talking about is going to be right at the line where you go from, you know, say 3, 4, 5 feet of water, and you get into that 2 foot of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where the grass, you know, in a lot of the bays, you know, it'll really start to be sparse, you know, at those points. And a lot of times I'll start there, but most of the time I don't. Most of the time I try to get on up in it, because a lot of people just fish that edge because they don't want to get in there and battle with the grass. And, you know, but, you know, further.
So you're going back
in there,
into the flat. I mean, I think this is important for people to hear, because usually you come into that flat with all that grass, and you would, I mean, you'd think, well, why am I going to push way up in there and go through all the trouble with this trolling motor and slinging salad all over my boat and all that stuff? Because it looks like a kind of a prairie of grass back there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the fish, they'll be, and what we've seen this past week, I mean, there's just tremendous numbers have already migrated into that shallow water. So, you know, they can't all be stacked on that edge. You know, I mean, they're going, you know, move, and there'll be fish scattered through there. Now, you know, they'll along the banks, there'll be some fish, but I mean, it's impossible for all of them to go to the bank and spawn together. So, you know, those areas out in the water that are inside those lines typically have, you know, just a lot of fish, but they're scattered, and that's a trick, but that's what makes being able to throw a spinnerbait so great is, man, as you and Mike both know, man, you can cover so much water and you'll find a little pocket within, you know, some grass that may have, you know, 5, 10 fish in it. And, man, you can pick a few of them off pretty quick with a spinnerbait and then go back with some plastic and catch the rest of them.
And what are you basically doing when you get in the grass and get in the bays? Are you lifting your motors up and just letting the wind blow you across, lifting your trolling motor up and lifting your motor up and just letting your boat drift? Is that what you do?
Well, you know, most boats, most people now, the bass guys, we have these hydraulic jack plates, and they help a bunch because you can keep your motor virtually vertical.
Down, that's right.
You know, and you can just raise it up. But, you know, I don't pole any. You know, I'll raise the trolling motor up, and you know, just but I try to be as quiet as possible, you know. And but you can do it. I mean, the trolling motors we have nowadays are really powerful.
Yep.
And you know, but you're better off when you're working those grass areas to try to minimize that noise as much as possible. Because I mean, you're targeting fish that are anywhere from, you know, a half a foot to 2 foot deep. So, you know, it doesn't take much banging and knocking to spook them.
That's right.
Yeah, and it's – but so you're going back. I mean, this is, I think, good for people to hear because they'll hear – I mean, just human nature, okay? If and I've done it a billion times. You come up, you get off the grass flat edge. I'll name places. I go Chocolata, okay?
Yeah.
And be in there, be in there. And here comes from the west bank out, here comes that grass flat. I mean, I duck hunt it during duck season. I fish it in the spring. And I'm coming in, and I'm going to start off – trying to be a cast length off so I can work. But the problem is I can't work straight down the bank. I got to pick it at a 90-degree angle or 45, which is not, you know, not the best way to do it. I know it. But then I'll work that, and maybe I'll let my boat on the next, you know, turn through there on the trolling motor. I put myself pretty close to that edge, and I cast up on the grass just a cast length there. But you're talking about going past that. You're going in to the grass flat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. You know, and, you know, it just seems to typically, you know, most days I'll catch a lot more fish approaching, you know, the bay fishing, doing that, than I will trying to just stay out and fish those edges.
See, so y'all, it like anything, whether it's hunting or fishing, I mean, a little extra work, you find more game, and in this case, more fish as well. Hey, can you hang on a second?
Oh, yeah.
All right, coming right back, because I know he'll get a couple casts in here while we head to a news break, and come right back with more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on this Turkey and Bass Saturday. Mardi Gras as well. We're talking about right now, when they say throw something to me, mister, do you throw them a spinnerbait, a crankbait, a soft plastic? Because we're talking to the order of Captain Wayne Miller.
Yeah.
And the mystic order of Captain Wayne Miller as he takes his float that happens to be his boat through the canals and the creeks in the Delta and flips
King
those.
Wayne.
Yes, King Wayne. throwing those things to the his loyal bass out there. Hey, Captain Wayne, tell folks, too, if they want to get a trip booked with you this time of year or in the spring or even in the summer, let's get that trip booked. How do they get in touch with you?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
All right. We were kind of doing it. We've gone back to Delta School here on bass fishing with you, and you being the professor and the king at the same time, and talking to us about those grass flats, because they are kind of daunting. Actually, you think about it, and just human nature, because nobody wants to get a bunch of grass on your engine, or if you're lifting up your trolling motor, like you said, you end up, if you're not careful, you make noise, or you sling milfoil all over yourself and the boat and everything like that. So it's just easier to fish the outside of the grass flat and then go around the other end. And you know what? You can catch, even I can catch some fish doing that, but you're doing something way beyond that. You're going in.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you really limit yourself if you just stick with those edges. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, they're not fish on them, because they are, obviously. The fish, you know, they migrate out of the deeper water in the creeks. They get in the bays, and, you know, they'll stay in those deeper edges of the grass lines and stuff. But then as they move up into real shallow water to spawn, I mean, they typically don't pull back out. Even when the water gets pulled down really low, on a, say, a north wind, if we have a front come through or something, you can still get in that foot and a half water, and you'll see fish, you know, moving in front of you, because they just bury up in that grass. They're comfortable.
So, I mean, they're back there, I mean, swimming through all that grass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wayne, I got to tell you, the first time I ever fished the Causeway in one of those bays, we had a tournament back in the early 70s. I was like 20 years old maybe or so, and I was in the Delta Bassmasters. We had a tournament out of Bill Winters, and I got drawn with this boy that fished the Causeway all the time. So we went over to the Causeway. I'd never fished the lower end of the Causeway before. And we went into Baydale Van, and I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, 2 foot of water, all this grass, and we going to catch something out of this? Oh, my God, we killed them. And it was about this time of year, from what I remember. Mm-hmm. It was, like early spring, February, and, man, I fell in love with that place after that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a phenomenal fishery, and obviously we have some years that are much better than others. Right now we're transitioning with this water coming up even more and more. You know, it's gonna reduce the amount of fishable water down significantly. But there's still going to be places down on this causeway you can come and catch a good limit of fish. I'm not going to tell you it's always going to be easy, but, you just have to bounce around and, really pay attention. Every bite, under conditions like this, every bite you get is telling you something. You really need to pay attention to, was I right in the middle of a big clump of grass? Was I on that edge? How deep is the water right here where I caught him? I mean, there's a lot of things you can do as an angler to help you in the decision-making process to move from one area in a bay to another and continue to catch fish.
And that's one of the things, too, you would think as a bass angler, if you're not used to that kind of fishing, it is more akin to speckled trout fishing in the spring, not saying the grass, but the kind of trying to figure out a pattern, covering big acreage of water, figuring out, where the fish are and what they want versus, a bass fishing, you get in the habit of I'm throwing at this cut bank or I'm throwing at that log or I'm going to throw at that little this bay fishing is just it's just covering water, right? I mean, yes, you and Mike both talked about holes and lanes and those kind of things you get used to seeing, but you just got to cover. You could sit back if you didn't know to read the water like y'all do. You'd just say, well, it all looks the same.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that, is definitive is the fact that, it's not all the same. And sometimes it's just the slightest little difference that'll you can key in on. I've seen it where, if you got in a foot and a half of water, you would catch a few fish, but then you get up in that ultra shallow, and, that's where they would be. They'd be stacked up. You just, like I say, you really have to pay attention to, where you get those bites and where you catch your fish at.
Well, I was going to say, another bay that you don't ever hear anything about, what about Polecat? I mean, I know for a long time, it was really kind of polluted. It was nasty, and nobody ever fished that. Is anybody fishing that anymore?
Yeah, there's. I tell you, Mike, it's amazing. I think people fish everything now.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Speckled trout fish, I'll say, at the south end of it.
The good news for the causeway is, man, the grass has come back. We have got some. I mean, the bays are absolutely, beautiful with grass. And, it's a scenario where, the fish are really going to be stocked in there. And, but for myself and I know both of you love too, but I mean, the spinnerbait bite is just incredible when you can get in there and catch these fish, when they first move up in those bays. And, you can really rack up some big numbers as far as catches and quality, too.
All right.
You're talking my language.
Now we are talking. All right. If somebody, one more time, if they have didn't get a chance to jot that number down, they can always just drop us an email here, but give them the phone number again.
It's 251-455-7404.
Yeah, Wayne, I'll let you get back to it. Thank you for taking about a half-hour break from catching fish to talk with us.
Okay, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Captain Wayne Miller checking in. And we are on the way out. Prep Sports Report on the way next. See you next week. Happy Mardi Gras.